Blog Talk Radio.
Politics. I've been great books written about him, one by Mike Royko, who I was acquainted with when I lived in Chicago, was a student. It's called Boss. It is a classic. There was another book written by Len O'Connor, I think, who used to be a broadcaster at WGN, which was owned by the Chicago Tribune, a Republican paper then, and was owned by the Colonel Robert McCormick, who we've had on this show, tapes from when they opened WGN, and which broadcast the Chicago Cubs games. But I think this is very interesting. A lot of people think that Richard Daley started the political machine in Chicago. That's a big fallacy. It's a political fiction. The machine had gone back as far as Big Bill Thompson, the Al Capone days, and Big Bill Thompson was a Republican. He was a corrupt Republican. He went into the Irish wards of Chicago, and when he was running for election as mayor of Chicago, and said, "If King George comes to Chicago, I'll punch him in the nose." Well, the Irish are very upset about how the English had abused the Irish, and they had good reason to believe that and to feel that way. But Big Bill got elected to the mayor's office in Chicago. Al Capone moved from Cicero back to Chicago and set up shop in, I think, the Sherman Hotel, which was then across the street from the Chicago City Hall and county building, because Cook County was, Chicago was the head of the administrative head of Cook County, Illinois. Anyway, Anton Cermak, who was a Bohemian, ran the Bohemians, which Otto Kerner later became a federal judge and governor, and then a federal judge, and then was indicted, convicted, and sent to federal prison because of his involvement with the Isaac scandal. We'll get into that another day. Fascinating man, Otto Kerner. I met him once when I worked in the federal building. But anyway, Anton Cermak was elected mayor of Chicago just as FDR was elected mayor, president of the United States. FDR had been governor of New York. FDR had come to Chicago to get the nomination, and he flew in, which was unusual. Of course, Hitler did the same thing in Leni Riefenstahl's film, Gosh, it escapes me right now. But anyway, great film by Lainey Robinson. It shows Hitler flying into, I think it was Nuremberg. And then, of course, FDR was paralyzed, and he had infantile paralysis, and he had to prove that he was capable of the doing the job as president, and he did come to the convention. More political conventions for president have been held in Chicago than any other American city, and that includes the 1952 Communist Party convention, which was held in the old Chicago Amphitheater, which was in the area where Al Capone used to have his cat houses and bars. And Vincent Hallinan, the father of Terrence and Patrick and a couple other siblings, got the nomination for the Communist Party for president of the United States. Of course, this was not going to happen. He was not going to be elected, and he wasn't. But it's a fascinating city. I remember the 1968 convention. I had dropped out of school, and I was shooting a film at the convention. Not outside the convention, I wasn't in it. I wasn't accredited to be in it, not that one, but two others I was accredited here in San Francisco. There was the riots of Martin Luther King's death, and the Chicago police were caught flat-footed. But prior to that, in 1967, Richard Daley had been elected actually in 1956, and it was the only time that he had to face a strong Republican, a guy named Robert Merriam, who was a professor at the University of Chicago. And it was a very close election, and Daley decided it's not going to happen again. Prior to that time, Richard Daley had been the Illinois State Finance Director in the administration of Governor Adlai Stevenson. And Daley kept his hands clean. Daley was a very shrewd guy. In fact, when I interviewed Mayor George Christopher before he died here in San Francisco, he used to tell me, I said, what was your relationship with Richard Daley? Well, they were both had an accounting background. And whenever Mayor George went to Chicago, when he landed at O'Hare, Mayor Daley had a car waiting for him. They got along quite well. I don't know about the corruption issue, but as far as I know, Richard Daley stayed above it, but he knew he couldn't control it, but he could contain it. I think that's fair to say. There's a lot of things he did. I think he was an only child. He was brought up in an era where the whites and the Irish looked down on those lower than them, and that was the blacks. And he always said the blacks have to work their way up. He had this problem with Martin Luther King, with other black activists at the time who were in the Chicago Police Department, and also Muslims and those type of people. Anyway, I'm going to play this clip. It's very interesting because it gives a warning to people who were going to come to the 1968 Democratic Convention. And he suspected and was told probably by the Chicago police had a very good intelligence network. And here's what he said at the time in 1967, prior to the 1968 Democratic National Convention, which was that was an interesting year in itself. And we'll get into that. Come on.
I shall embrace charity. I shall love mercy and walk humbly with my God in trying to give the people of Chicago the best government and the best city in the United States. You can see the future pattern of Chicago. We're hopeful to close streets and residential areas and make malls out of them. We're hopeful to have every school with a playground alongside of it. And we're hopeful to provide employment and jobs for the men and women that live in our city. And above all, we hope to root out poverty, we hope to eliminate the slums, and we hope to provide equality of education and opportunity for all of our people. And this we think we can achieve, and with the help of God, we will. We respect the constitutional rights and the human rights of everyone, but no one will take the law in their own hand or be law and order in Chicago as long as I'm mayor.
Now, Now, in March of the spring of 1968, there were the riots. There had also been the riots in L.A., and Richard Daley was determined that was not going to happen in his city. Now, the Chicago police were caught flat-footed, as it were, and Daley was embarrassed because he had survived a major police scandal called the Somerdale Police Scandal in 1959, where a guy named Richard Morrison, was called the Babbling Burglar, was caught burglarizing a house in a upscale neighborhood of Chicago. And the cops, it was called the Somerdale Scandal, and the cops decided to use him to burglarize houses so they could pad their retirement. Well, they got caught. It was a huge scandal. Timothy O'Connor, Irish Catholic, was the police chief at the time. He was forced out, embarrassed, and it wasn't really his fault. And so Richard Daley decided, I'm running for re-election. I'm in trouble. So what did he do? He says, I'm going to have a nationwide search for the best police chief we can find. And so what he did was he called professor out here at Orlando Wilson, who was actually Scandinavian ethnicity and had been a colonel at Nuremberg after World War II in the U.S. Army. He was a colonel, I think, of MPs. He is a professor of criminology at the University of California, Berkeley. He came to Chicago to head a committee, and they couldn't find anybody. And finally, the members of the committee said, you're the best one. Richard Daley accepted that, and that saved his political career. And Orlando Wilson was a very fine Chicago police chief. He did retire in the 70s and died in Southern California, I think, in 1977. And, of course, some of the Chicago police may have gone back to their old ways. But anyway, Daley decided he wasn't going to have what happened in L.A. He was not going to have a riot to disrupt and disgrace his 1968 Democratic National Convention. He was leery about Hubert Humphrey, and he said after Humphrey had lost, he said, I thought we had a stronger candidate, and he met one of the Kennedys. Anyway, this is what I remember that 1968, August 68 convention. It was also the time of riots in Prague. It was called the Prague Spring, and there were since there were a lot of Slovaks in Chicago, and people sympathetic with Dubček, who was trying to reform Czechoslovakia and break the Soviet yoke. There was also in May of 68, de Gaulle's government fell. So it was a very upheaval. It was big upheavals in worldwide politics. And in August 68, the Chicago police were ready. They were brutal. They did slash tires. They were beating. They did beat people. But Daley was right. Nobody was seriously injured and nobody was killed, but it was very firmly dealt with, and a lot of people didn't like it. I remember Allen Ginsberg doing his om thing at the on the side of Lake Michigan in Grant Park, and people took him seriously that he was going to put LSD in the water. Richard Daley freaked on that one, and that was one of the reasons that he and his police department reacted the way they did. This is what he said. And the aftermath of the 1968 Democratic Convention. A little slow here. What happened?
In the heat of emotion and riot, some policemen may have overacted, but to judge the entire police department by the alleged action of a few would be just as unfair as to judge our entire younger generation by the action of this mob. I would like to say here and now that this administration, our administration, and the people of Chicago have never and will condone brutality at any time, but they will never permit a lawless, violent group of terrorists to menace the lives of millions of people, destroy the purpose of this national convention, and take over the streets of Chicago.
Now, it's interesting. Dan Rather of CBS News was a young newsman at the time covering the convention. Walter Cronkite was up in the booth overseeing the convention. Dan Rather got into it with some security people inside the convention. There was a scuffle, and this is what happened.
Dan Rather?
What's your name, sir? And what is your name, sir? Take your hands off of me.
Dan Rather.
Unless you intend to arrest me, don't push me, please. I know you won't, but don't push me. Take your hands off of me unless you plan to arrest me.
Wait a minute.
Well, Walter, as you can see...
I don't know what's going on, but these are security people apparently around Dan. And obviously getting roughed up.
We tried to talk to the man, and we got bodily pushed out of the way. This is the kind of thing that's been going on outside the hall. This is the first time we've had it happen inside the hall. I'm sorry to be out of breath, but somebody belted me in his stomach during that. What happened is a Georgia delegate, at least he had a Georgia delegate sign on, was being hauled out of the hall. We tried to talk to him to see why, who he was, and what the situation was. And at that instant, the security people... Well, as you can see, put me on the deck. I didn't do very well.
I think we've got a bunch of thugs here, Dan.
Now, Richard Daley was very pissed off when he heard that. He later had an interview with Walter Cronkite, and in effect, he forced Walter Cronkite to just about apologize for what that thug remark. Even though some people did think Chicago police did behave that way. But you have to look at it in its context. There have been worse situations where there have been demonstrations, especially Kent State, in Watts, and some of the other cities across the country, which was experiencing really intense civil rights demonstrations. It was a hell of an era at that time. Now, we keep hearing the phrase, and I think it's a canard, it's unfair to Chicago, that the Chicago way is if all the corruption that comes out of Washington and the corruption we see in politics and in the media and in these bogus nonprofits all comes from Chicago. Now, there is a Chicago connection to some of this, and that's with Saul Alinsky, who I had met as part of my speech class with Professor Fansham, but I didn't get much out of Saul Alinsky. He did come to San Francisco and set up these bogus nonprofits set up at 82nd Street. He died. Saul Alinsky died in Carmel, and the question is, why was he down there? And if this guy pretended to be a friend of the poor, where did he get all his money to live that lifestyle? That question has never been answered, and nobody's seen his probate if there was one. But this phrase, the Chicago way, is grossly unfair because we've had political machines throughout the history of the United States in every major city, starting in New York, the infamous Tammany Hall with Boss Tweed, who eventually was brought down. But Tammany Hall politicians went well into the 19th and into the early 20th century. I think Carmine DiSapio was the last major boss of Tammany Hall. In fact, I worked with Jan Allen, whose father was one of the bosses in Tammany Hall in New York City. She emigrated to San Francisco, and in World War II, she was a Navy nurse at Pearl Harbor. In Philadelphia, you had the Green Machine, William J. Green. Every city's had this. Boston, you had Michael Curley, the Irish crowd. Well, Green and Curley were Irish. Tweed, I don't think, was. And then in Kansas City, there was the Pendergast machine, which Harry Truman worked in. He was part of that, and then that machine was brought down. And what's happened in San Francisco, we have people coming here from other places, particularly New Jersey, which I think is still one of the most corrupt states there is. In fact, in Passaic, New Jersey, they had a federal strike force of marshals, postal inspectors, Department of Justice officials investigating the Passaic Housing Authority, where they were giving affordable housing to the cats, and there was all kinds of crazy corruption that was ongoing in that city. It's relatively small, but much worse is what's been going on in San Francisco, where we had dead people getting homeless assistance, and vacancy payments were made from the apartments that they supposedly lived in or died in. were made to the operators of the like the Sweetheart Hotel, 473 Ellis, which we have put up on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. But what has happened here is we've had people coming from all over the country, from Texas, the Willie Brown, Jess Unruh, from Boston, Art Agnos, from Burton, I think, is from Ohio, if I'm not mistaken. There are four brothers. And they've created a political machine which acts, as some people think, as a racketeering enterprise. They have hijacked the 501c3 sector and made it very political. They support, some of them support pedophilia. We have people who've come here and gotten into politics, and they do things here that they wouldn't get away with if they were back in, say, New Jersey, even in New Jersey or New York or Chicago. But they get away with it here so far. We'll see how long that lasts. Now, another thing about the Bradley Manning case, here's an Army private who was a communications specialist, presumably. And what he did was he had, as I understand it, he had a spat with his lover. And this is the reason why he turned over all of this material to WikiLeaks. It wasn't out of patriotism. It was out of crotch politics. Now, he did the same thing that a U.S. Navy sailor named Michael Walker did, the son of the of John Walker and the Walker spy family, which was working for the Soviets, and for which all he got was $100,000 for the damage that they did. And Michael Walker recently got about 8 years in federal prison. Young man, his life was destroyed. He was a communications expert on the USS Carl Nimitz aircraft carrier. But he did it for money. Now, he didn't get much, but he got almost got life. And Bradley Manning did it out of a fight with his lover. And what Manning did was put a lot of people at risk. I understand there have been some deaths of our operatives, and the backdoor channels for diplomats have been closed. People are spared to talk because these delicate negotiations and meetings are put in danger because of what this guy did. Had he been in the Soviet Army, in the Russian Army, he would have probably gone to Lubyanka prison and gotten a bullet in the back of his head. They don't fool around with this stuff. So even though we know they spy and we spy, and that's the nature of the game, because Americans have never understood espionage and national security in that respect. They still think it's a Nathan Hale thing. I have only one life to give for my country. No, no, no. It doesn't work that way, and it hasn't. But so we should look at that in that regard, that this Bradley Manning is no hero. Now, we're going to, one of my favorite topics, I do it every year, is that we are going to have next week, it's Victoria Day in Canada, so we're going to spend the whole week on, as much as the whole week, on Canadians who have emigrated legally and illegally to the United States. Canadians who have made a contribution to this country, as a lot of them, not only in the entertainment industry, like Alex Trebek on Jeopardy. You've had Lauren Green, who's from Saskatchewan. You know, we've had John Ireland, British Columbia. Mary Pickford, who was called America's Sweetheart, born in Toronto, Canada. We had John Houston's father, Walter Houston, Toronto, Canada. A lot of people have come down from up there. Raymond Massey of the Massey Ferguson tractor family, and his brother was Governor General of Canada. So it's going to be fascinating, and it's a lot of history that we don't hear about. And for instance, John Girard, the guy who invented the Girard rifle for the U.S. Army, born in Quebec, I believe, French-Canadian, as they say up there, or Blanc Nig, which means white nigger. That's their description, because they feel discriminated against by the English majority in the other parts of Canada. And, of course, the Indians, who have been abused up there, they're placed on places called reserves, which is Canadian term for what we call reservation. So we'll be back Friday, and we'll be preparing for O Canada, which is one of my favorite subjects. We'll also get into a guy, since we're concerned about this, the oil from the tar sands in Alberta. There was a guy named Julian who came down from Alberta, and he ran a racket on oil, This is back during the 20s, and so we'll get into him. You know, that little scam. And then, of course, the notorious another guy from Alberta, Canada, the judge, became a San Francisco judge, Kevin Vincent Ryan. Very controversial, what he did to U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Neri. Fortunately, there are people around the country who have become aware of this judicial sodomy that was performed on this 18-year-old sailor who defended himself against male rape. So we'll end with our usual subject, our usual theme, politics and poker, and we're going to have a lot of that in the upcoming week. Also, we'll be talking about Pierre Trudeau and also how Canada was the only North American country to put the entire province, which would be equivalent to our state, in 1970, Pierre Trudeau put the province under martial law because of the assassination of a Quebec government official. And we'll get into that on Old Canada. And hopefully Patrick Butler and I have both had French-Canadian nuns as teachers and brothers. And we'll talk about our experience. And, of course, my family, we believe some of them early on did emigrate from French Canada down to Louisiana. So Lynn, tonight, with Politics and Poker, and come back, go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS, and we will have the pedophile politicians who are trying to bully the Boy Scouts, and you look at the background of these people. It's really shocking. But here we go, Politics and Poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the clown?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little phrase, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll fall.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyushinkovich, I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out, I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot, that's me!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, play for a pot.
good night, folks. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas, and we'll be back Friday. Have a safe night. Good night.